right, that's great. Oh, turn off your cell phones. I'm just kidding. That's right. Yeah, so it's really great to be here. I'm enjoying my visit here in Mumbai. It's my third time. Like I was saying to Mark, I love this city. It's really great. Now, I was asked to speak on a couple of topics, but before I do that, I want to take a survey. I think I know the answer to this question. How many of you believe there is God, at least some sort of God? Now, John didn't raise his hand back there, so obviously he doesn't believe in God. Although he's a minister for the church, I think he's busy. So, you know, I was asked to speak on the existence of God. And I'm going to maybe reduce that a little bit, because to be honest with you, I think here in India, most people believe in God. I do think, though, as we move forward in time, we're going to have more and more skeptics. I really believe that. So this first part will be more like things you can use as you discuss with people. And so then I'll move on to discussion about which God. And I think that's really more the issue here as we deal with things here in India. So I want to talk a little bit about arguments for the existence of God. Now, a couple of years ago, I was in a debate, actually, on the existence of God, and I was trounced in that debate. And the reason was, I took the position that there is no God. And actually, my debating opponent was a high school student, so that was kind of interesting. And by the way, the reason I lost that debate is because my arguments were so weak. So here's the outline. I'm going to present the atheist's argument that there is no God. I'm going to show you why I believe it's a very weak argument. Then I'm going to show you why atheism really, as a way of thinking, as a way of approaching reality, fails. And then I'm going to give you a very brief outline, arguments for theism, for a belief in a God who really is involved in the world. And then I point you to my website, more materials, you can do your own research, okay? So I have four arguments. And remember, in this debate a couple years ago, it was a bunch of teens, and I started out making these arguments kind of like this, okay? And it was interesting watching the reaction. One reason that I don't believe in God, let's say, is that you can't see him, and he can't be observed. So how can you believe something that can't be observed? That's one argument. Another argument is, look at all these believers, look at all these hypocrites. Look at their lives, and their lives say for themselves, obviously there's no God. And third, given all the suffering and evil in the world, let's just say suffering. I think you'll see that argument. And lastly, unless you can prove to me God exists, then I say he doesn't exist. Okay? A few years ago, we actually arranged a debate between a person who might be the most famous atheist in America today, Michael Shermer, with my friend Jacoby. And in that debate, again, Doug won the debate, but the reason he did is because really, even Michael Shermer is aware that these three arguments are pretty weak, so he didn't even bother. He just went straight to that one. That's not a very strong argument, folks, but let me get into it here. So point number one, you can't see him. I mean, you can't measure him. All right, we can't observe them. I mean, even in science, I talk about how in order to believe that something's true, you have to have some observable effect of that thing. And so famously, Yuri Gagarin, you may know him. You don't know him directly, but Yuri Gagarin was the first man in space. And he was a Russian guy. And he was, of course, he's an atheist. And the famous quote from Yuri Gagarin is, I went to space and I didn't see him there. And a lot of people who don't believe in God, the question I have for them is, now tell me about this God you don't believe in. What's this God you don't believe in? An old man in the sky, this angry, whatever. And I say, well, I don't believe in that God either. The God I believe in can't be seen. In fact, in Hebrews 11:3, it says, by faith we understand the things that can be seen were created from something that is unseen. The God I believe in is not a God who can't be seen. Now, how many here have ever seen an electron? Good. Has anybody ever seen an electron? No. Now, do we believe in electrons? Yeah, why? Because we can see the effect. How about the wind? Can you see the wind? No, you can't see the wind. But do you believe in the wind? Of course, you see the trees moving. And so really, and do you believe in love or in hope or in faith? None of these things can be seen. In fact, according to the Bible, everything that's important is invisible. Think about that one. I think it's true. So the thing is, we know something's true from the effects that we can see. And I believe as we look at the universe, and I'll talk about in my arguments for God, that everything we know about the universe says for sure that God is real because we can see the effect of God. So the existence of God is not proved because you can't see him. In fact, quite the contrary. I believe the existence of God is inferred from the effects that we see because of God. Now, the next argument is, well, look at all these Christians, bunch of hypocrites. I mean, or even believers in God in general. Some people would say, I don't believe in God because every war that was ever started was started by somebody who believes in God. Is that true, that every war that was ever started was started by somebody who believes in God? Well, practically, but that's because 99.9% of people have always believed in God. Are there hypocrites out there? Are there people who set a terrible example and say they're Christians or Hindus or Buddhists? Absolutely. But here's my question. Is that evidence that the God is not real? The fact that people set a bad example, the fact that people don't obey the God that they claim to believe in, is that evidence that God isn't real? That's not even an argument, really. That's really nonsense. Now, if you don't believe in God because of the hypocrites that believe in God, well, let me see. Do you go to a movie? Do you ever go to a movie? Are there hypocrites at the movie? In fact, everybody's a hypocrite, right, on some level. Really, this, in my opinion, really, this is not even an argument. You know, I've heard it said that much evil has been done in the name of God. And you know what? It's actually true. I mean, let's be honest about it. The Crusades were done in the name of God, supposedly. Now, I believe if you ask Jesus, is it okay to go there and kill all those Muslims there in the Middle East in order to save Jerusalem? Jesus would have said, please don't go. Don't kill anyone in my name. And one thing about when believers do evil things, one thing I know is when a Christian does something evil, at least they have a moral system that tells them it's evil. But when an atheist does something that I consider evil, what's there to say why you shouldn't do it? All right? So when a Christian does things, it violates an absolute moral standard that he or she holds to. The next argument against God, I believe, is at least it's an argument. The first two, in my opinion, are not even arguments. The third argument for atheism, if you will, or that God doesn't exist, is suffering. Think about this. In fact, I'm going to trick you here a little bit. Do you believe in a God who's all-powerful, who could do anything he wants? I need a bit more commitment out of you, okay? Do you believe in a God? All right, you do. Okay, good. All right. Do you believe that that God is loving? In fact, that love is even defined by that God. All right. Well, then I say the God you believe in doesn't exist. Think about the suffering in the world. Think about a child who's born with a terrible defect and then dies. Why would God allow something like that? That God who's all-powerful and all-loving, the God that I believe most of us believe in, and if you look at the universe, surely that God doesn't exist. Now, unlike the first two arguments, you can't see him, or hypocrisy, which in my opinion are really not even arguments at all. You have to admit, this argument, at least at first glance, seems like, you know, there's maybe something going on there. Okay? So in view of suffering, somebody might argue that God is not real. But I believe that argument is based on false premises for a few reasons. First of all, it assumes that suffering itself is evil. And I believe that suffering is actually good. In fact, without suffering, there's no joy. Without suffering, we remain always immature. And another thing is, what is the source of suffering? Now, I believe the reason there's suffering in the world, I believe to the atheist, suffering is meaningless. And it proves life is meaningless. But I don't agree with that. I believe life does have meaning. Why is there suffering? Well, the main reason they're suffering is because God gave us a choice. And I believe we have choice. I believe we have what's called free will. And I say God is so loving and so powerful that he made beings who have free choice, who can choose whether they'll do right or do evil. And really, God took a chance when he created us. It's like parents. You know, it's kind of risky being a parent, is it? Isn't it? Because when you choose to be a parent, you risk that your children will reject you. God created us with the ability to choose whether to obey Him and do what's right or to do evil. And we chose to do evil. And there's a law. I think it's a moral law. I think this law is about as avoidable as the law of gravity. Let's say I don't like the law of gravity. I don't believe in the law of gravity. I'm against the law of gravity. Whoops, all right, you know, good luck getting around it. This is the law. If you sin, if you rebel against God, you bring suffering into the world. And I believe almost all suffering is the result of people rebelling against God. You know why there's suffering in this world? One of the main reasons is because God loves us so much. What? Yeah. God loved us so much that He gave us a choice of whether we would love Him or not. In fact, love can't be forced. You can't make somebody love you. Try it. Try to force somebody to love you. They go in the opposite direction. Love gives a choice. God gave us a choice. We rebelled against Him, and we brought much suffering into the world. Does that explain all suffering? No, I don't think it does. Why did that tsunami hit Sumatra a few years ago? Whose sin caused that tsunami? You know, the mullahs in Indonesia said it's because people weren't attending the mosque. I'm not sure God even wants people to attend a mosque, but that's beside the point. Let me tell you why that tsunami happened. And I believe it was not because of anybody's particular sin. The reason it happened is because of plate tectonics. Have you heard about plate tectonics? And you say, well, why did a loving, powerful God create plate tectonics? Well, I don't know, but let me tell you why I think so anyway. Because of plate tectonics, it's like God's recycling system. And because of plate tectonics, it constantly recycles the minerals in the earth. Otherwise, the earth would be devoid. It would be devoid of life. Also, because of plate tectonics, we have an atmosphere. If you don't like plate tectonics, go to Mars. They don't have any plate tectonics. No atmosphere, sterile surface, not so good. So my response to the atheist is, if you don't like plate tectonics, how about if you create your own universe that doesn't include plate tectonics? I say, thank you, God, for plate tectonics. And I say, thank you, God, for weather. So there are natural causes of suffering, but most suffering is because of evil. But either way, to claim that suffering proves there is no God, I don't agree with that at all. Because at least in Christianity, suffering has meaning. And suffering is an evil. According to Christianity anyway, what's evil is sin. What's evil is to rebel against God, to choose to rebel against the one who made us. But, you know, I have to admit, at least at first glance, this criticism of belief in God, which is that the suffering and babies and crime and warfare, at first glance, that does seem to make you question whether there is a loving, all-powerful God. But I believe in the end that Christianity provides the only real explanation for suffering. And of course, there's also the question of evil. Why is there evil? Now, the atheist says, evil? There is no such thing. I'm going to talk about that. Now, my fourth argument, let's review here. Let's review. Arguments against God. Number one, you can't see Him. That's not even an argument, really. Number two, hypocrisy. Again, that's just rhetoric. The question of suffering, at first, you know, that is a hard question. That is a hard question. But I believe that God is a better explanation of that than no God. And then the fourth argument is, well, you know, unless you can prove to me He exists, then I guess He doesn't exist. Who said that? Who said the default argument is that He doesn't exist? According to who? Who gets to say that? And I would say this. The vast majority of all intelligent, well-educated, psychologically helpful, stable people that have ever existed believed in God. So who gets to say that atheism is the default position? And like I said, in this debate we had a few years ago with Michael Shermer, one of the most highly educated, well-known atheist in the world, that was his only argument. He said, unless you can prove He exists, then I say He doesn't. Well, then let's get to part three in this presentation. Show why he does exist. All right. Now, let me tell you why I believe atheism fails. 3 points. One, because it's based on circular reasoning. I believe the principal reason people believe in atheism is because they believe in atheism. Seriously, it's based on circular reasoning. Also, it can't answer the questions, any of the questions people care about. And really, atheism has been tried and it has failed utterly. All right, so circular reasoning. In order to prove there is no transcendent being, you'd have to be a transcendent being yourself. I've heard people say, science proves there are no miracles. And to that I say, really doesn't make sense. Because science describes the things that are natural. So how could science in and of itself prove there's no miraculous? Basically what you're saying is, there's no miraculous. How do you know that? Because science says there's no miraculous. But you're trying to use science to prove something that science doesn't even discuss. Science only deals with those things that are natural. Since science only discusses the natural, then it can't even be used to disprove the supernatural. In fact, I was watching a BBC show a few years ago, and what it was kind of like smart people on trial. And so what they would do is they would bring a theist, that's somebody who believes in a God who's involved in his creation, and an atheist. And they have to defend their position. So this atheist guy got up there. He was very confident, very confident. Oh, yeah, yeah, it's those people, blah, blah, blah. And so I said to him, sir, how? He made his opening statement. He said, the only things that are real are things you can measure. Everything else is unreal. That's the atheist perspective. In other words, supernatural or God or spirit or soul, these things are not even real. And so the panelists asked him, well, how do you know that? He said, well, you know, the Christians did this, and the Muslims did that, and the Buddhists did this, and the Hindus did that, blah, blah, blah. And they said, excuse me, sir, we asked a question. Please answer the question. In other words, you say the only things that are real are physical things, and we asked you, how do you know that? He said, well, blah, blah, you know, these people said this. And they said to him one more time, they said, sir, you just need to answer the question. How do you know the only things that are real are physical things? And he said, well, I guess I just believe it. That was his argument. Circular reasoning. All right, now, my next point is that atheism, a belief that there is no God, can't answer any of the questions people care about. I teach a course on the philosophy of science. And I talk about what science is good at and what science is really bad at. And I say that science is really good at answering questions like, when did that happen? What is that thing? Where is that thing? How many? By what means? Okay? Now, do you care about those questions? Do you really, in your heart of hearts, really care when it happened? Is that what really motivates you, gives you purpose in your life? Does where that thing is that a question that you actually care about? Now, here's another list of questions I think we do care about. Why am I here? What is my purpose? What is my place in the universe? What is my value? What is the right thing to do? Is there a supernatural reality greater than the physical reality? Is there any non-physical reality? In this case, science answers none of these questions. It answers none of these questions. It's not very helpful. According to atheism, what is your value? Oh, about 600 rupees. A little bit of carbon, a little bit of calcium, a little bit of magnesium, some phosphorus, some sulfur. What value do you have? None. According to atheism, what is your purpose? I don't need purpose. That's a meaningless word. If the atheist is right, your life has no purpose. You have no value. Now, I've got another question. Do you have a body? Or are you a body? Simple question. And I believe if you ask the atheist, they'll give the wrong answer unless they really think carefully. Simple question. Do you have a body? Or are you a body? Everybody knows the answer, right? We have a body. Well, if that's true, then atheism is wrong. Because atheism says you're just a sack of chemicals. If atheism is right, then love is not real. So you shouldn't say to your wife, I love you. You should say, I neurotransmitter you. I chemical you. See, if atheism is right, then I don't exist. Seriously, folks, if atheism is right, then I do not exist. Because when I say I don't mean my finger. I don't mean my left shoulder. I don't mean my brain. I mean me. But if atheism is right, then literally you don't exist. Your body exists. See, I believe atheism does not answer any of the questions that people care about. It's an empty philosophy. All right? So if naturalism or atheism is right, then I don't exist. There's no spirit, no soul. And also, justice is a meaningless word. Evil. If atheism is right, there is no evil, and love is just chemicals moving around in your brain. All right. And last of all, why I believe atheism is not true is because it's corrupt. It's been tried. Atheism has been tried as an experiment. All right. Soviet Russia, awesome, really great. You know. By the way, I've given this lesson in Russia. I have to change this slide, you know. But anyway, communist China, Pol Pot regime in Cambodia, the French Revolution. Atheism has been tried. And basically, atheism is a system that says there is no evil, there is no right, there is no wrong. Do you want to live in a world like that? Seriously? So anyway, I believe atheism is circular reasoning. Its arguments are very, very weak, and it's a bankrupt philosophy. Now, I'm only going to spend about 5 minutes, I'm sorry, maybe 10 at the most, on arguments why I believe there is a God. And one of the reasons is I think everybody in this audience already said they believe in God. But I think you do need to be able to defend that belief in front of unbelievers. So there's a bunch of them. I'm going to spend time maybe on this one, maybe the first three. And these are great also, but I'm going to skip them because I want to talk about which God, okay? Now, but by the way, just so you know, you cannot prove God exists. You know what? I can't prove that love exists. I can't prove it. How could you prove it? But you know what, as they say in the song, do you believe in love? You know, I believe in it. I can't prove God exists. All I can really do is I can say, given the nature of reality and what we know, by far the only reasonable conclusion is that God does exist. So no, you can't prove it. And so if you want to claim you can prove God exists, you're probably making a false claim. Okay? I believe God gives us free will. He gives us choice. And that's one of the reasons he doesn't drop notes out of the sky. I exist. And it's not like if you pray for the light to turn green, it just does because you did. It doesn't work that way. God leaves us room for doubt. I believe God leaves us room for doubt because of free will. All right, but there's a few arguments I would mention. The moral argument. Is it wrong to commit genocide? Where was it? In Bangalore, this terrible situation that happened around Christmas where these women were raped. Is that wrong? Are you sure? Well, then God exists. Because if absolute right and wrong is real, then God has to exist. And here's the argument. It's a pretty simple argument. Let's take as a premise that absolute moral laws exist. In other words, some things are right and some things are wrong. If that's true, such right and wrong has to come from an authority. And what is the source of that authority? By definition, it's God. Now, if the moral argument, this is what's called the moral argument. If the moral argument is not a good argument, then justice is a word that literally has no meaning. You know, we say that's not right. And you'll catch the atheist making a mistake. They'll say, that's not right. Well, why did you say that? You don't even believe what you're saying. And they'll say, it's not right for you to push your religion on me. Well, you just told me that God exists, all right? And so the moral argument essentially says, that things are literally right and literally wrong. And if that's true, then God has to exist. Because what is the basis for such morality? So do you believe that there is absolute good and absolute evil? If you do, then you have to believe in a God who's a source of that good and that evil. There has to be some sort of overarching authority. Otherwise, we just have naturalism. And again, if that's true, then that's kind of scary. You might as well just get out of here right now, okay? The next is the cosmological argument. The cosmological argument says everything that happens has a cause. And would it be fair to say that probably it's true that the universe exists? All right? Would anybody like to argue that the universe does not exist? All right? And everything that exists has a cause. Everything that happens has a cause. Well, what would be the cause of the universe? Clearly, there has to exist something outside of, above the universe itself. I'm telling you, folks, I don't know an alternative to this argument, really. How does the atheist explain that the universe exists? How could they even begin to explain it? One thing that's true, it exists. And simply the existence of the universe itself, I believe, is for all practical purposes virtually proof that there is a cause. If in everything, so here's the premise. Everything which exists has a cause. Did this get caused to exist in the form it is? Everything that exists has a cause. The universe exists. The universe was caused, therefore, and that cause, by definition, is God. And actually, William Lane Craig came up with, I think, even a more sophisticated version of this, which is everything which begins to exist. Now, why is that important? For example, the number two. Arguably, the number two did not begin to exist. Arguably, the number two sort of self-exists, if you will. Or even a circle. You know, circles weren't created. Circles just sort of are. So that's the atheist way out of this argument, just so you know. That's the sophisticated version, okay? So William Lane Craig said, well, everything that begins to exist has a cause. And so the number two did not begin to exist, neither did a circle or square. Everything that begins to exist has a cause, because otherwise, how did it begin to exist? All right, the universe began to exist. Now, wait, is that true? Did the universe have a beginning? Well, I don't know, but atheists agree the universe had a beginning. Even atheists, the Big Bang model, even atheists have noticed, gee, it's hard to get around this, the universe began. In fact, according to atheists, there was nothing, and then from nothing came everything in an instant, like a brilliant flash of light, and the universe came into existence, just like it says in Genesis chapter 1. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe was caused, and that cause is God. The last argument for the existence of God I'm going to mention, again, very briefly, is it's called let's go back to our summary here. This is the teleological argument. Now, that's a big fancy word, teleological. Basically, teleology is something is teleological. That means it has a design. All right, would you say that this thing here was designed? Do you think this was just a random thing, or there's a design here? Well, if there's a design, then what else is there, obviously? Designer. Obviously. And that's the design argument. And the evidence that the universe is designed, in fact, I'm going to give a talk on this Wednesday night. I'm going to go into a lot of detail there. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to give you just one example out of literally hundreds of examples. But which has more evidence of design? My clicker or a bacteria, the simplest life form? Which is more complex? Which has more moving parts? Which has more evidence of design? Do you know the simplest living thing is a nano factory of unimaginable complexity? Far beyond this. So where did that bacteria come from? It just sort of, boom, popped into existence? I believe this thought is irrational. The evidence for design is overwhelming. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give one example and then move on, because I want to get to the second part of our talk, okay? Now, this has to do with the parameters that define the universe. It turns out, by the way, I assume you know, at least you've at least heard of the Big Bang. This is the current accepted model, which is before this event, there was nothing. And then in one instant in time, all energy and mass and even time and space were created from nothing. Okay? Now, that to me is pretty clear evidence for our creator, but never mind that. It turns out in describing the Big Bang, what they noticed is gravity is the force that causes matter to come together to create planets and stars and galaxies and all that. And what physicists discovered in modeling that, now would you agree that that's a small number? 59 zeros and then a 1. That's a very small number. What they found out is if you were to take the force of gravity that it actually is and change it to make it smaller by that fraction, the universe would have expanded forever and galaxies and stars never would have formed. Okay? On the other hand, if you were to take the force of gravity what it actually is and make it larger by that fraction, the universe would have collapsed almost as soon as it was created. Now, I want you to know that's a very small number. I hear they have a lottery here in India, yes? Let's say your friend won the big lotto. What would you say about that? Awesome! But what are you playing the lottery for? I thought you were a Christian, but never mind that. All right. What if they won the big lottery again the next week? And then again the next week. And then the next week, they're in jail, right? It's like Slumdog Millionaire, except 10,000 times over. You know what I'm saying? And this is equivalent to winning the big lottery 6 times in a row. So let's just say gravity even exists at all, and how gravity came to exist. How can the atheists explain that gravity came to exist? They're have no ability to explain that. But let's just assume it does exist. Well, if it were to exist, what's the probability of having gravity have the right value? About that much. So the atheist says, oh, it's just an accident. The believer in God says, I don't think so. I think it's designed. Well, what's the probability the atheist is right? There you go. You want to go with that probability? You know what? I believe it takes fantastic levels of faith to believe in atheism. You have to ignore so many things. All right. So anyway, that's the end of my thing on that. In fact, there's other arguments for the existence of God, but I really want to get to our second presentation here. Uh-oh, I lost it. It's okay. I'll get it back really fast. Okay. So the first part of our discussion is reasons to believe in God. Okay. Now, next question is, okay, fine. In fact, let me stop right there. I believe what we've shown is that the most reasonable conclusion, given the fact that some things are just plain wrong, it is wrong to rape your daughter. That is wrong. You may say it's not, but I say it is. And given the fact that the universe even exists and the evidence for design, then I say, well, clearly there's a designer. There is a God, some sort of supernatural presence. But the next question is, well, which God? Which God? Now, I'm going to argue the one that we find revealed in this book right here. I want to present an argument for that. Okay? And now I understand that probably most of you already agree with that, but I want to help cement your faith and give you more reasons to believe that. So I want to talk about this. Who is the real Jesus? You know, people say a lot of things about Jesus. Here in India, I think most people believe in Jesus. They believe in, there's many things that, some people think that he's a sage. That's not an herb. That's, a sage is like a wise man. You know, the guy on the hill, what's the meaning of life? Some people think that Jesus is a wise man. In fact, I think Muslims believe that. I think most Hindus believe that, and Buddhists. All right? And in fact, I actually believe that too. Okay? Some people say that he's a wise man. Others would say he's a prophet. Some people say he's a liar or crazy. Some people say he's Messiah. Others say son of man. Still others say son of God. Some people say he's God in the flesh. Other people say, no, he's just merely a man. Some people say He's one important religious leader amongst many. I think, would it be fair to say this is a common approach here in India? In fact, would this be the most common understanding about Jesus here in India? I think so. And by the way, these are not mutually exclusive. For example, could you be a wise man and a prophet? Yeah. Could you be a prophet and a liar? No. Okay, could you be a crazy man and the Messiah? No. Could you be God in the flesh and a prophet? Yes. But one thing I know is you cannot be God in the flesh and merely an important religious leader amongst many. Between those two, you got to make a choice. And I'm going to argue that this is not true. In fact, this is certainly, certainly not true. That's what I want to argue. Okay? So some people say Jesus is one of many religious leaders, Confucius, Joseph Smith. Well, that's a whole other story, Joseph Smith. Now, what did Confucius say about himself? You know what he said about himself? He said that he was a wise man. Was Confucius a wise man? I think so. I think he's in the top 2%. I think he's a very wise man. I'm not going to deny that. All right? Now, people say, you know, here's where I want to go. I want to go right here. And, you know, there's many ways to get here. I could take the Baha'i path, or I could take the Muhammad path, or the Buddha path, or the Krishna path, or the Rama path, or whatever, or the Jesus path. You know, they're all going to the same place. I say nonsense. Let me show you why. The reason is, if Jesus is who he says he is, then everybody else is wrong. And I believe every human being needs to make a choice. Let me talk about why. By the way, that's easy to say, but I don't want to talk about why I believe that. Okay, what did Baha'u'llah say about himself? He said that he was a prophet, the last prophet. Oh, gee, that's what Muhammad said about himself. I better not show you that cartoon. But anyway, what did Moses say about himself? He claimed to be a prophet and that God spoke to him. Okay? Really, that's what Muhammad said. What Muhammad claimed about himself, more or less, is what Moses claimed about himself. Okay? What did Buddha claim? Buddha claimed to be a wise man, to have found a very wise and noble path. You know what? I actually agree with that. I like Buddha. Almost everything I know about him, I like. Except that he abandoned his wife and children. But other than that, seriously, I'm not being facetious. Okay? And in fact, I'd say Buddha probably was who he said he was, or at least largely. But I believe that this idea that Jesus is one important religious leader amongst many completely evaporates when we look at the claims of Jesus. So that's what I want to do. I want to look at the claims of Jesus. All right? And, you know, it seems like there's choices. If Jesus is God in the flesh, if Jesus is who he says he is, then there's certainly other options that go away. All right, we're going to actually pull out a Bible here, okay? I'm going to read it. You can just listen along if you want. John 5:39. John 5:39. Just listen along if you'd like. Now, this is Jesus talking to the scribes and the teachers, the PhDs in Judaism. And here's what he says. He says, "You study the scriptures diligently because you think that in them you have eternal life." He says, "These are the scriptures that testify about me." So what he's saying here is the entire Old Testament was written about me. John, I want you to stand up. John, I want you to stand up. And I want you to make this claim. Old Testament, you know.
The Old Testament is written about me.
No, I want you to do it with, get that little smile off your face.